Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes.
Well, welcome everybody to the Mountain Grapevine radio show today. On the telephone with us, we have Wayne Gay. Wayne is the owner and winemaker at Watoga Lake Winery in Butler, Tennessee. Wayne, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chuck.
How about telling us how you got interested in growing grapes and making wine up there?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll try to shorten it as much as I can. My wife and I were in the furniture business down in Florida for 25 years. In 2002, we were in High Point, North Carolina at a furniture show, and we had never been over to a western North Carolina area around Boone and never been in eastern Tennessee, in the northeastern part anyway. So we decided to take a little trip after furniture market and come over in this area and just look around. And we wound up over in Johnson County, Tennessee, and we passed a hill off of the county road, and it was just beautiful, full of dandelions, the mountains in the background. And my wife said, boy, that looks like Sound of Music. If we ever retired, I would love to live here and have a place like that. And we go down the road, turn around, come back, and there's a sale sign on it. We bought that afternoon. So that's how we got to Tennessee.
What got you interested in the winemaking and grape growing end of things, though?
Well, that's another story. I'll try to shorten up. We had, as part of our furniture business, we had been in the Italian import business. We imported some furniture, but we imported Italian ceramicware, and we had showrooms all over the country. So that was basically a second tier of our business. Anyway, we had enjoyed going to Italy for 20-something years, went over usually a couple of times a year, spent time there. And prior to starting the import business, I never really was much in wine. I'm a beer guy. I still am. And that's probably, I probably should say this, but that's probably my beverage of choice. But
Now come on, Wayne. Just to be fair, there are those who imbibe a little of this. You know, I like a good whiskey now and then, and I certainly enjoy a good dark beer or like a porter or stout, and certainly that goes along with my wine. So you can't be too picky and choosy there.
No, we really did start developing sort of a palate for wine, because if you're in Italy, you got to do as the Italians do, and wine is always there. We would go into one of our manufacturers and talk about, you know, an order and place an order, but they always broke out the wine. One of our favorites had a huge demijohn in the corner of his showroom. And after meeting with customers, he always went over and tipped the demijohn over and poured a generous glass of wine. So he actually tried to do that in the beginning to make you order more, but we were always smart enough to know to wait to the end. That's kind of being in Italy and, you know, seeing the vineyards and the Italian architecture, we decided that at some point in our life we would like to live in an Italian-style house. When we came up here, we were just looking at the landscape. It just reminded us of Tuscany, so we decided that, well, we're going to build an Italian-style house up on the hill there. And that's kind of how the Italian part of it came in, the grapes. We decided, as landscaping, instead of doing a lot of trees and flowers and all that, let's just do some grapevines. It'd be a great landscaping idea. So we were going to order and just plant a few vines in front of the house just for the aesthetics of it. And it just got carried away. Totally got out of hand. So in 70 vines or so, we wound up with 700, our first planting.
What kind of grapes do you grow there?
Well, basically, we have four American varietals. We have a Concord, Niagara, Steuben, and Golden Muscat, and the balance are either vinifer or hybrids. We grow Chardonnay, a grape called Chancellor. We do Trinidad, and we also have some Sangiovese, and we have Cabernet Franc. So primarily those are the ones that we grow that are commercially viable. We do have a few odds and ends, like we have a small row of Baco Noir, and we have some table grapes. But beyond that, that's pretty much the varieties that we grow.
How many acres do you have under vine, Wayne?
About 8 acres. We have 40, close to 5,000 vines, I guess, at this point. It did get out of hand. They got carried away.
Okay, so it's 4 acres, you said?
8 acres.
I'm sorry, 8 acres. Okay. Are you out there doing the pruning and taking care of the vines?
Oh, yes.
You're a true vigneron then. You know, you grow the grapes and make the wine from the grapes that you grow.
Yeah, 85, 90% of our wine is made from our own fruit.
We're just tickled pink to have winemakers like you in this region. The people on the radio don't realize, but I was one of the judges at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival last year, and you had a wine there called Chancellor. It was a 2013 that won a gold medal. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what was the origination or how'd you come about making that particular wine?
Actually, the one you're talking about, well, we had two wines entered in the Asheville Festival. One was called Fox Hollow. And it was actually a blend. We used our Steuben grape and our Chancellor grape and blended those two together. Primarily our reds had previously, with one exception, had been dry reds. And we had customers asking for something a little sweeter. So we decided to do Chancellor. And we were just going to sweeten that up a little bit and offer it that way. And just for the heck of it, I decided to blend a little of our Steuben in, and I found that it just gave it so much of a fruity, floral character that we decided to go ahead and do it as a blend, and it was a big hit from the beginning. So we entered that one and actually got a double gold, and the other one we entered was a what was what we call our Duncan Hollow, and that is a port style. We fortified up to 18%. We actually use our Chancellor as a base wine for it as well. And we aged it, barrel-aged it for 2 years.
For the winemakers and the winemaker wannabes, what kinds of things do you do to a wine to change it from a wine to a port?
Well, basically, the secret there is the alcohol has to be higher. So we go port wine typically, of course, the history of port wines is original from Portugal. A lot of wineries in the U.S. do port wine. They call it port. It's usually red, and it's usually a blend of different wines. But we decided to go just with our Chancellor because it was a more bold European-style grape flavor profile, I think, to start with. So we thought that would be the easiest thing to use and the best to go with. What we did is we took some of our wine and had it distilled to use as new as brandy to add back to the wine to fortify it. Of course, fortifying means adding additional alcohol to it. So it's an old traditional way of actually preserving wine. Back in the old days, they found that if they added more alcohol to the wine, it would keep it from oxidizing, and it would also keep it from developing bad things in the wine. It's very enjoyable wine. It's not a table wine. It's with the alcohol percentage that high, it's really something that's more enjoyed after dinner. I call it just a cigar wine.
Sure.
I don't smoke cigars, but if I did, I would definitely want a glass of port with it.
We've got a lot of listeners on the radio show, Wayne, who have an interest in learning more about that kind of thing, so that's why I ask these questions.
There's other ways to develop a higher alcohol wine. One way is basically to start off with a much higher sugar level of fermentation and use a yeast that's more alcohol tolerant. And you can get some wines that can bump up to 16-17% alcohol by doing that. We just decided to do it through fortifying. I think it worked out very, very well. We're actually looking at possibility of doing a couple of white fortified wines. More of an aperitif type of wine. Of course, port, if you were before 2005, I believe it was, if you were a winery in the U.S. and you actually labeled your fortified wine as port, then you can still continue to do it. But after 2005, the U.S. made an agreement with the EU that we would no longer allow fortified wine to be called port in the U.S. So We just say it's a port style. And we actually label it as a dessert wine because it is about 12% residual sugar as well.
When you come to the winemaking process, we have some people out there who are always interested in learning about the winemaking. Do you use liquid yeast, dry yeast up there?
I use dry yeast.
If we were to walk through your winemaking area up there, would we see oak barrels for some of your wines?
We have some oak barrels, not as many as I would like. We actually started on a very, very tight budget, and our first reds that we did, we actually did stainless steel with oak duck, and then we ordered some American oak barrels, and that's what I use for my Chancellor. And they worked out really well. We're probably going to order some more barrels this year and start building our barrel capability.
Are you using American oak or French oak or Hungarian oak?
Presently, everything is American oak, but I would like to get some of the French oak barrels as well. The French oak is a lot more expensive. You've got declining forests in France you get the oak from, plus the fact that they have to be coopered over there, or all the parts of the state sent here to be coopered. So it costs more because of transportation. But they are a different profile. I use some of the staves I use are French oak staves when I do stainless steel oak. So they impart a little bit more subtle oak, a little bit more vanilla, I think, than American oak does.
For educational purpose for our listeners, Wayne, give us a rough idea about what the relative costs are, American oak versus French oak.
Typically, American oak barrels are, I'd say just round figures, about $400. A French oak barrel can go $1,000, $1,200, $1,400 easily.
And these are 50, 55-gallon barrels?
I think most of them are about 58 gallons, plus the 60-gallon capacity.
For the wannabes out there, that's about the size of a 55-gallon drum.
You do make them in smaller sizes. Now you can get a 30-gallon, I believe.
Oh, sure.
If you wanted to do it as an amateur winemaking, that would make sense.
We've been speaking on the telephone with Wayne Gay, the owner and winemaker of Watauga Lake Winery in Butler, Tennessee, and he's been sharing with us some of his winemaking characteristics up there. And if anybody gets a chance to be up near Johnson City or up in that area near Boone, you might want to take a little extra time and go over to his winery. Wayne, at this point in time, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. Hang on, folks.
Today's program is being brought to you by Granny Garnet's Asafetida Bag. Those of us who grew up in the mountains never had access to doctors when we were growing up. It had to be a pretty serious injury before you were shuttled off to a doctor in a distant town. Many sickness problems were solved by wearing an asafetida bag around your neck. I can assure you it wasn't a pleasant experience. It did seem to work rather well. My mom used her granny's recipe for us young'uns when we come down with a cold or flu. She would stuff that tiny silver dollar-sized bag with pungent herbs, often including ginseng, pokeweed, and yellow root. This bag got its name from asafoetida, a resin derived from the four-year-old roots of the Ferula asafoetida plant, a member of the fennel species. Now, asafoetida by itself was considered a cure for many ailments, including epilepsy, hysteria, whooping cough, bronchial and asthma issues, a cure for intestinal worms, toothache relief, breaking addictions, contraceptive and causing abortion, so pregnant women beware. It was an antiflatulant that eases digestion and constipation, natural meat preservative and pickling, and it was also a successful lure for fishing if you coated it on your bait. And some even thought it repels evil spirits and potential disease-infected strangers. But asafoetida, combined and fermented with the other herbs, gave that terrible stinking bag its power to cure or kill just about anything. Granny learned the recipe from old wise women herbalists living here in the mountains of Madison County. The special herbs have antimicrobial, antiviral, and antioxidant properties. The awful smell wards off colds and other diseases. It will also ward off enemies and friends alike. No amount of perfume or toilet water would cover up its essence. If swarming yellow jackets have haunted you in the past, that's over. They will never come near you again. Granny Garnet's trick is to collect the pokeweed just before the sun rises while the part of the plant is covered with dew. She makes the small bag to hang around your neck out of muslin, and when filled, it's about the size of a silver dollar. And when it starts to smell like rotten leaves, garlic, rosemary, onion, and mint, Granny knows it is ready. The younger generation has forgot all about the asafoetida bag and how it helped their parents through a lot of sick days and nights. And most parents don't remember the recipes. Granny Garnet saw this as an opportunity to bring back an effective old-fashioned remedy and make a few well-needed dollars for her rainy day fund.
She now makes Granny Garnet's Ass Affinity Bags for sale for those who need them. Granny Garnet's Ass Affinity Bag is another great native product made here in Madison County in the good old U.S. of A. You can buy Granny Garnet's Ass Affinity Bags for $1.298 at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program. Welcome back, everybody. We've been speaking with Wayne Gay, the owner and winemaker of Watoga Lake Winery in Butler, Tennessee. He's been sharing with us some fun things up there. Wayne, I want to circle back on something. You originally talked about looking at grapes for landscaping. I want to hear a little bit more about that decision and what happened next.
In discussing how many grapevines to order, my wife tells this differently, but I'll tell it the way it really happened. She says I made a mistake, and instead of ordering 70, I just put an extra zero in, and that's how it happened. But we were looking at the idea, we're going to plant grapes. I already did enough reading and research to understand that there's a lot of work in growing grapevines. It takes a lot of work, just the planning, everything is very involved. Although I probably had to go back and do it over again, I probably made a lot of mistakes. Be that as it may, I decided that if I were going to put the time into them, I would want to do something that we could at least grow a crop that we could sell. Maybe we could at least cover the labor, my labor that way. So that's kind of the idea that we had. We had met another wine grower over in Sullivan County, Tennessee, and talked to him, and he was selling grapes to wineries down the Pigeon Forge, Tennessee area. So that was our intent, to actually grow a crop that we could market. And that's how we got started in the grapes.
Let's talk about what things did you do right, and what things would you have done differently?
Basically, I think we chose some varieties that were well-suited for the area. With the exception of the Nephra, we do not do that well with our Nephra grapes. The Cab Franc are always our problem children. We just don't seem to have a long enough growing season and growing days to get those to the potential that they should have. We use them basically just for blending. I don't do a standalone Cabernet Franc. But otherwise, I think we did choose all the other varieties seem to thrive here. They seem to do very well, and we've been very, very pleased with the results. As a matter of fact, for our Concord, we won the William O. Beach Award at Wines of the South, and what that is in a Tennessee grape. It's for Tennessee grapes. It's the best of Tennessee fruit is what the award is for, and we actually won it this year, I think. The winery that had it before us had won it two or three times in the past, and we felt pretty happy about the idea that as a very small grower and the only commercially viable vineyard in Johnson County, that we were able to do that with our grapes. So we felt very proud of that.
Sounds good. So what things would you have done differently?
Probably would have done a little bit more site prep in deciding where to put the grapes. We tried to get all of our south or west facing, southwest facing slopes. So I think our site selection was pretty good, but we basically used an auger just to drill the holes. A lot of the growers will go in and actually trench their rows, trench where the vines are going to go to break the soil up a little bit more. We have a lot of rock and clay, which actually is good for grapes, but I think we could have done a little bit better job in our site prep before we planted. It might have made some difference in the, how our grapes came along initially.
What elevation is your vineyard there?
We're at 2,350 feet, so we are considered a mountain-grown grape. We're actually a member of the Appalachian High Country Wine Growers Association, so that includes three states in North Carolina.
What is the main thing that you have with respect to the topography there? Do you have rolling hills? Do you have steep hills like we do here in Madison County?
We're in a hill by Lake Watauga. We're overlooking the lake. We're not actually on the lake, so it's a little microclimate. It's very well suited, I think, for grape growing. But we are surrounded by the Stone Mountain is our border with North Carolina. Then we have another ridge of mountains that run through the center of our county that we look out at. So we're kind of in a valley, but we're on a hill in the valley, if that makes sense.
Well, geographically, I looked at the map some time ago and saw that you're just on the north edge of Watoga Lake there. Do you feel that that has some amelioration on the weather?
Yeah, I do. I kind of track it when we have our very cold weather, and I usually find that we're 3 or 4 degrees warmer than the surrounding area. Our winery is actually separated about 1.5 miles from our vineyard. And when I come to the winery, I leave the vineyard and come to the winery, I see about a 3 or 4 degree difference in my thermometer on my vehicle. So it tells me that, and it's, we're always a little warmer there. We also, being up on a slope, we get the winds, and that helps particularly when we have those rainy nights or very foggy nights to dry the fruit the next day. So that's a very big benefit for us.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the characteristics and the kinds of wines? Give us a list of your menu, if you will, of the kind of wines that you're producing there.
What we've tried to do is we try to do sort of a broad spectrum for customers. We found out very quickly in the wine, in winemaking for commercial purposes that you have a very broad base of customers. Some like the drier wines, others like more sweeter wines. And some people like something in the middle. So we just kind of try to cover all the bases. Our Chardonnay we do as a Chardonnay style. We do a Sauvignon Blanc as a more like a Pinot Grigio is what the style characteristic I was trying to get. Our Chaminade gets into a little sweeter varietal. We do a blend that's a little off dry using Chaminade, Golden Muscat, and Sauvignon. We actually have come up with 16 labels pretty much using, say, 8 different varieties of grapes. So we do a lot of blending. We do a blush, we do a rosé, but we do 2 dry red, sweeter red in our Fox Hollow. And then we do the Concord as a very sweet, well, I'll say that, 5% residual sugar. And we just call it our country style wine, just like Grandma used to make. And that's the one that we did the William O. Beach Award for and also got a double gold for it, Wines of the South. So, then we do the port wine, and we also do another sweeter dessert wine that's raspberry chocolate, and that's a real hit.
Oh, that raspberry chocolate sounds yummy.
We were surprised when we first brought it out. I mean, literally everyone who walked in the taste room walked out with at least one bottle of that. So it's been a real success for us, and I think we've developed the following because we do have so many styles of wine to choose from.
I think from a marketing perspective, Wayne, that's probably smart. A lot of wineries down this region are very single-minded on stuff. They do just all dry wines or they just do all sweet wines, and they develop a following, but people after a while know that it's just not something you can pop in on as a group of tourists and find something they're going to like. So I think you've got a good thing going on that regard.
Well, that's one thing we found. We are a tourist area. Anyone who's ever been up in Johnson County, Tennessee, this is not a place you just pass through. Johnson County is a little remote. We're accessible from North Carolina off Highway 321 coming from Boone. Or on the north side of us, if you come 421 out of Boone, get down to us that way. We also, coming up 321 out of Johnson City, we're about an hour from Johnson City, so they can reach us that way. Or coming over from the Virginia area, they would come down through Mountain City, Tennessee, entire area here. But we are on the lake. There are a lot of rental cottages and cabins on the lake. We have a lot of summer visitors, and that's primarily where our largest customer base lies.
If people were to start traveling through that section of the country, how would they find you?
We are on the internet. We have our website, WatagoLakeWinery.com. We also are on. We have a site on TripAdvisor, and also on Facebook. So we can be. Looked at that, using those media, and they can get directions on how to find us. We do have signs on the major highways, and we're trying to come up with a better sign program this year than we have now. One thing we found is that GPS doesn't work all that well up here in the mountains. Some GPSs come right to us, and other people's take sort of a circuitous route around to try to find us. So we have tried to put more signs up in the area so people can have some directions on how to get to us. But we're basically on the eastern end of Lake Watauga. Basically for people in North Carolina, particularly in the Boone area, know where the Watauga River comes into Watauga Lake, and we're just on the north side of that area.
What is your capacity? I forgot to ask it earlier.
As far as the amount of wine we make?
Yeah, how many cases or bottles a year do you do total?
Last year we did about 1,000 cases. We'll do about 1,500 cases this year.
Okay.
So we started out with the idea of keeping it small. I am, quote, retired, but we find that in spite of ourselves, we are growing, and we've developed a wedding pavilion up in the vineyards, and now we're increasing the size of that. We're more than doubling it. That's a project that we have ongoing right at the moment, right as we speak. So by April, we will have close to a 4,000 square foot wedding pavilion area. Part of it will be enclosed so that it's more sheltered from the weather. We do get pretty strong winds up on our hill occasionally, so it will give us a little bit more flexibility in how the weddings can go there. We have about 15 weddings booked for this year and more calls every day, so that part of our business is certainly growing.
Well, it sounds like you got a fun place to go up there, Wayne. I'm looking forward to making it out your way maybe this summer sometime and checking everything out. And I suggest to the folks who are listening in, if you get a chance to get up that way, take a little extra time and go over and see the Watauga Lake Winery and meet Wayne and taste some of his wonderful wines there.
I would like to just add that we are seasonal, so we close January, February, and March. So we're presently closed. We will open if someone is in the area and we're here. They can reach us by telephone. We'd gladly come over and let them come to the winery. But our actual regular season starts in April. The first opening date for 2016 will be April the 7th. And we're open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and we're open on Sundays from 1 to 5.
Well, we've been speaking on the phone with Wayne Gay, owner and winemaker at Watauga Lake Winery in Butler, Tennessee. Wayne, we really appreciate your taking time to be with us today.
Chuck, thank you very much. I enjoyed the opportunity.
We're looking forward to visiting your winery and tasting some of your wonderful wines and some port. Okay, folks, that's our program for today. We'll just call this a wrap.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!